Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome to our class on Sukkos. Okay. Sukkos in the Torah is listed as a time of Zman Simchasenu. Actually, that's from the prayer service. But it does mention three times the word Simcha B'Sukkos. That is the time, the Simcha of the whole year, is sort of like the source of it is in Sukkos. So in the time of Cheres, of freedom, to kind of like break the bounds of things that are causing mitzarayim, straits and confines at the time of Pesach, to free ourselves from the desires, the lusts of the world, whatever it is that's constraining us, enslaving us. There's a special koyach on Pesach that we can free ourselves from it. It's a time, Zman Cherusenu, a time of freedom. Shavuos, right? Zman Matan Torasenu, it's a time of the giving of the Torah. Right, a special time that we can, so to speak, re-accept the Torah. We do re-accept the Torah in Shavuos and carry out throughout the year. And Sukkos, which is a third of these Shalosh Regalim, of the three festivals, right, is Azman Simchasenu. Okay, historically, there is a whole debate about Sukkos. In other words, Sukkos, is it a celebration that we dwelt in shaky booths in the desert, right, when we left Egypt? Or, in fact, it is a celebration of those seven clouds of glory that, by the way, encircled us like a sukkah. The mystical clouds of glory, right, gave us like a spiritual sukkah. Which one is it celebrating? Well, the Vilna Gaon answers this question, and really one is related to the other. First of all, the fact that we were willing to go out into a desert without any provisions and to follow blindly Hashem in the desert, right, in merit of that faith and trust that we had in Hashem, right, to dwell in shaky booths in the desert, not knowing where we were going, so we merited to have supernatural sukkahs of these clouds of glory. Okay? The other question that's asked, now the Vilna Gaon addresses this other question actually, which is, if Sukkos is a celebration of dwelling in these booths, why do we not celebrate it right after Pesach? Because that in fact is when we went into the desert, right? Right after Pesach, we went into the desert and we dwelled in these booths. And the time we celebrate it is 5 days after Yom Kippur. So, if you think about it, what happened with these seven clouds of glory? They continually protected us, but we find at times that when we sinned, they were removed from us. As a matter of fact, with the sin of the golden calf, we completely lost them. We no longer merited them, we lost those clouds of glory. And what happened? As we know, Moshe Rabbeinu got forgiveness for us, and right on Yom Kippur, we were forgiven, and we started to construct the Mishkan. Sukkos is the same date as the construction of the Mishkan. And with that, the clouds of glory returned. Okay? So, that is the celebration why we do Sukkos now, 5 days after Yom Kippur and not after Pesach. Because we're celebrating, what we're celebrating here is a tshuva, a reacceptance, a return of these clouds of glory that departed after the golden calf. In other words, our tshuva now is accepted, right, on Yom Kippur, right? And now Hashem returns these Ane Akava, these clouds of glory, the sukkah, right? So it's the cloud, it's the sukkah of forgiveness in a certain aspect, okay? And these are the clouds of glory. This is the sukkahs, right, that stayed with us the rest of the 40 years in the desert. So that is the idea that we're celebrating on Sukkos, which comes right after Yom Kippur, is that we're celebrating the aspect of Hashem's forgiving us and protecting us. You know, both physically and giving us a Sken Shemaya not to sin again. So that's Dafka, while we celebrate Sukkos now, after Yom Kippur, of forgiveness, because we're celebrating the Sukkot, the return of those clouds of glory. Okay. Now, as we've mentioned in previous years, Sukkot has several names. One of them is called Chag HaAsif. It is the holiday of ingathering. In the agricultural cycle in the year, this is the time of the most materialism, right? As a farming nation, right? You plant, right? And you go through all this effort to make sure the right amount of sun and the right amount of rain gets the land for the crops to harvest properly, right? And here it comes, right? Finally, Sukkot time comes and you finally harvest in everything you've been working so hard for the whole year. That's Sukkot. Basically, it's the time you get the paycheck, right? And it's Dafka at this time, during the time of the most gashmias, the time of the most materialism, the time when we get this paycheck, what are we commanded to do? We leave the comforts of our home and we dwell in the shaky booth that's called the shadow of Hashem, so to speak. There's a point to this, right? Showing that even though most people would find a tremendous simcha, a tremendous joy, and a tremendous trust in their bank account, you know, they're very happy now, they got the paycheck, and now they feel secure, right? Which is what a home, by the way, you know, a solid roof over your head, you feel secure, you feel comfortable, you feel wealthy, you feel happy. No, says B'nai Israel, you know what? It's true, we got the paycheck. No, but Dafka, we're showing that that's not what gives us our simcha, and that's not what gives us our comfort, and that's not what gives us our trust. We're going to leave now, during this time, the most bountiful time of the year, our comfortable, strong-built houses, and we're going to dwell in the sukkah, this construction that represents the shadow of Hashem, to show that that's where we find our simcha, that's where we find our betachon and trust. And it's very good why we read Kohelet's Ecclesiastics on this day. Because if you look at Ecclesiastics, right, Hakol, Hevel, Havolin, everything is vanity, right? Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, starts listening to everything he had, right? Everything he had. He had certain fruits and vegetables no one else could grow. And he had the most magnificent, the wealthiest of all kings, right? He had everything, right? And he shows, if anybody else wrote Ecclesiastics, he could say, he said everything is vanity and emptiness because he didn't have the good of this world. No, Solomon had it all. And through it all, he saw that it's all vanity, it's all emptiness. No matter how much you have, you can only tantalize the nerve endings and satisfy the taste buds, you know, to a certain saturation point. And then that very same thing you get sick of. You know, isn't that funny? The very same thing. I don't care whether it's marital relations or steak, physical food, whatever it is. If you get to a certain point, you reach a saturation point, and that very thing becomes disgusting to you. You sit down, you're hungry. You finish eating. Do you want to eat? It's the last thing you want to do. Because that's the metzias of the physical world. Right? And Sukkot comes to show us, even though I have the paycheck, I just cashed in, it's the most bountiful time, but I realize everything in this world itself is vanity. Now, to use the wealth, okay, for spirituality, that's a different story. And that could be why, of all the holidays, Sukkot has a special, special mitzvah of Hiddur mitzvah. We have a verse in Hazinu, it says, Zeh Keli Van Veu. Excuse me, it's not in Hazinu, it's in Bishalach. In Zekili van Veil, this is my God and I will adorn him. Okay? And from there they learn there's a mitzvah called Hiddur Mitzvah, to embellish the mitzvah, to beautify the mitzvah. This is really emphasized on Sukkot more than any other time. You're supposed to get a beautiful esrog, spend extra money to get an extra nice lulav, and so forth and so on. Right? Could be, it's possible that this is the time of year that you're bringing in the wealth, right? So wealth in itself, like Ecclesiastics says, and all the pleasures of this world that can get you, is vanity. It doesn't mean anything. Aye, but you use that wealth to enhance mitzvahs, the Hiddur mitzvah aspect, then you've made it part and parcel of spirituality. You've raised it. Therefore, on Sukkot, the time of materialism, right? We have this special time of hiddur mitzvah, of embellishing the mitzvah, teaching us what to do with the wealth, what to do with the money, what to do with the materialism. Okay? But our simcha and our trust and our, is not in the physicality in itself. What the physicality can do, you give tzedakah, you can build Torah institutions, whatever it is, it's very nice. Okay? But again, we dwell in a sukkah, on sukkahs, for this reason, and also to emphasize another important point. And let's talk about this. The idea, and we've said in Pirkei Avos, Ha'olam hazeh doime leproizdor lifnei olam haba. This world is like a lobby, an entryway to the next world. This world, you get by. You don't build a mansion. You know, you get by. This is just a world, a temporary world. And that's exactly what the sukkah represents. A sukkah, it's not something you can live in all year round. Shaky, you know, walls, right? The roof is covered with branches and stuff. It's not a place you can live all year round. It's a temporary dwelling. That's to teach us the same lesson Ecclesiastes teaches us. This world's a temporary place. And just get by with as little as possible. You're preparing yourself in this world for the next world. Right? That's the lesson we're supposed to take out of Sukkah. So we can go to the rest of the year, we don't get lost in the materialism. Again, Sukkot is that time, right? We cashed in, right? But still, okay, I got, even if I have the money, that's not what I want to indulge in. I don't want to indulge in the physicality, the materialism. That's not what my life is about. This is a Sukkah. This is a temporary dwelling, right? So that's another aspect of why we leave our homes and dwell in this shaky little booth, a temporary dwelling, dafka, during this time of year. Okay, just a second. I'll quote from you the Sefer HaTodah. He says it like this. This is his language. It's a person at this time of year, Lo yiten kol simchaso b'kinyone oilam hazeh. A person should not put his simcha into acquiring possessions of this world. Va'anu ein lanu simcha ela b'cha bovad. But we, our simcha is only in you, Hashem. B'tzel shchinasecha, in the shadow of your shchina we're dwelling. That's what the sukkah is. Okay? And we leave the oizev kinyonav, we leave behind our possessions, the yitzeh, the sukkah, and we go out to the sukkah, right? Lachasa is betzel kan tve'ashchina, to dwell again in your protection. That's where we find our trust. The verse, koichi v'oitzim yodi, v'Yisrael batach v'Hashem. People trust in their might and their power, but Israel trust in God. Sukkahs, we're not trusting in the Gashmias. We go out in the shaky booth under your dominion. Hasuka hidira arai, says Michtav Meliyahu. It's a temporary dwelling. I mean, everybody says this, but listen on. He bechinas bitul yesh. What does the sukkah represent? It means a nullification, a bitul yesh of oilam haza, a nullification of this world. Bechinas zu. He shiyasig ha'odam she'ein shum kviyas ba'olam hazeh. This idea is to teach us that a person has to realize there's no settling in this world. There's no permanency in this world. That's what it is. The sukkah is temporary. This world's temporary. Va'adaraba kol ta'avasav va'anoisav chaloifis va'veris. Just the opposite. A person has to realize all the pleasures of this world and all the desires of this world, they're here and they're gone before you know it. Hakora zu mitzuya hi etzel kol ben das. Everybody knows this. Anybody with any sense understands that any pleasure you've had in this world, you know, the greatest meal that you had a week ago, do you have any recollection of it or any pleasure from it from today? That's it, right? The pleasures are usually a couple minutes long and about 3 inches long as they slide down the taste buds of your throat. And it's gone forever. I always like to use the parable. It's not my idea, but I saw it, I think one of the art school books, it's a beautiful parable about the vanities and the pleasure of this world is like a firework display. It's beautiful, it's overwhelming, it's fantastic, and then it's gone. And all that's left is like smoke, mist. It's gone. In Ecclesiastes, Hevel Havolim, it's all vanity, but that same word for vanity, right, is also breath. Hevel is breath. That, you know, a breath, as soon as you spit it out, so to speak, as soon as you leave them out, it's gone. That's what the vanities of this world are. They're like a breath, they're gone. He goes on, he says, okay, so when we understand this idea that all these pleasures of this world are, they come and go in an instant and they're gone, but Valken b'mitzvah zu menasa kodesh baruch hu umas olam. Oh, he says something else here. He says, therefore, with this mitzvah, Hashem's going to test the nations of the world. The nations of the world, the goyim, are going to come at the end of days and say, we want a share of the Torah. That's what they're going to say. Hashem's going to say, says, okay, I'm going to give you a simple mitzvah, and sukkah is its name. Go ahead and build the sukkah. And Hashem's going to make it very hot that day. And they'll build the sukkah, it'll be very hot, and they'll kick in the sukkah. They'll kick in the sukkah. So what's the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to test and dafka this mitzvah? Ki ein lehem oisa nekuda pnimis musugel Yisrael. Okay, because they don't have the same inner dimension of a yid, which is what? The fact that the truth is, if a person is very uncomfortable, he is exempt from sitting in the sukkah. For example, if it rains. You know, so it's very hot. It's impossible to stay there. You're exempt. But the idea of what they did is they kicked in the sukkah. When a yid can't do the mitzvahs of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which he understands is his permanent residence, his whole life, he leaves, but he doesn't kick in the sukkah. Right? He leaves and says, oh, I didn't merit. I didn't merit to have the mitzvah. It's a shame. Right? But this kicking in business, that shows the inner dimension, the difference between a yid and l'havdil goy. Okay? That they don't have this idea of simcha shel mitzvah, the joy of a mitzvah. And it's Hashem, we'll talk more about this on Simchas Torah. How important it is to have, why it's called Simchas Torah, to have the simcha of the mitzvah, that's mamish, the life force of the mitzvah, the soul of the mitzvah. So that's the difference, and that's why the goyim are going to be tested dafka with this mitzvah of the sukkah. Because the idea also is that this is even a mitzvah they can understand. They can also understand, any bar das, any person of any mind can see that this world's temporary. The idea of sukkah, and the pleasures of this world is temporary. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu will give them that mitzvah, that surely you people must realize that this world, with all your pleasures and all the power and prestige that and glory that you're looking for, is going to be gone tomorrow. That's what the sukkah represents. Even you guys can see it, you goyim, right? So that's what he's going to test them, and they're going to fail the test. Okay. The question was just asked. Okay, so what exactly is your question? Let me clarify the question. Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm on tape.
Family, where right. Members of your family who you love dearly,
right.
While you've become Baal Shuva, they are almost the other extreme, borderline goyish.
Right, right. It's a tough call. You know, a person has to show these other people the beauty of the mitzvahs. You find many people come back to Yiddishkeit because they remember the smell of the challah or the chicken of Friday night of the babi. You know? They remember, which represents more than just the food obviously, the whole atmosphere, the spiritual atmosphere, that there's something beyond the dimension of this world. You invite people, that's why, you know, what do we do when we try to get people involved in Yiddishkeit? We invite them over for a Shabbos meal. Not because it's not the meal; it's the celebration of Shabbos or Yontov with the meal, the nice clothes, and the singing. And they see that there's something more to this world than just these vanities and these pleasures and the materialism. That there's a dimension to a person that they're ignoring. That's called their neshama, their soul, that yearns for this. And the soul, the neshama of the yid, senses this. They see the beauty in this. In the Shabbos meal, in the sukkah, in the mitzvah. You don't have to sell it. It sells itself. There's only one key ingredient. You have to do it with simcha. Zman simcha seinu. So you have to show it in simcha. Right? If you show it, and this goes very, it's very important for children, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein talks about this, if you do mitzvahs, but you do it with the kretz, and you do it with a sigh, like it's such a tircha, it's such a trouble and everything. So, okay, you did the mitzvah, but your children are going to grow up thinking that Yiddishkeit is a straitjacket. It's a chore. They won't see the beauty in the simcha of it. I don't care if you have back-to-back yontivs of cooking, or you have to fast, and it's long davening. But the fact is, you're a servant of Hashem. You're doing the ultimate simcha. There's people, funny, in the physical world that are exhausted, but they feel great. Whether it's football workouts 2 a day, or jogging 5 miles, right? But they're happy. It's a tiredness that they feel good about. So you see there's such a messias, such an idea even in the physical world. So yeah, sure, sometimes you get tired. You know, you're fasting, you're going from one yontav to another yontav and then dancing, but it's a tiredness of simcha. And you can't get enough, right? That's the idea. And we, to answer your question, how do you influence these people who are not in the system, so to speak? They have to see the beauty of it. They have to see the beauty of it. And the sweat is a sweat of the soul. It's sweat of happiness. Right? Of this is what your life is, and it's your greatest pleasure. It's the same, you know, anything that you love, it's not a problem. You can teach, if you love your child, you can have the ultimate patience, you can say the same thing over and over again to them. You may be exhausted from training and working with them, but it's an exhaustion of love. Okay, and that's what we have to show. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the four species here. The four species, there's a lot of interesting things. Sukkot is a special time. Another theme of it, rather, is this idea of achdus, of unity. Unity. Now, it's a very popular word that we are in exile because of hatred towards each other, and we have to show unity. And the Sukkot represents us, especially after Yom Kippur, where we all ask each other forgiveness, right? We come to Sukkot's idea of a unity. It says in the future that we'll dwell in a sukkah. We say the sukkah and shalom go hand in hand many times. Shalom, peace, shalom, whole, and dwell in the sukkah. And the idea is expressed in many ways. One of the ideas is the esrog is a numerical value 610, plus the other three species of the myrtle and the willow and the lulav is 613. So that's a unity of all the mitzvahs. Also, they say that the four species represent different types of Jews. One has the lulav has a taste. The dates doesn't have a smell. The esrog has a taste and a smell. And the willow and the myrtle, one has a taste but not a smell. And one has a smell and not a taste. These all represent different types of Jews. One that has Torah but not good deeds. One has good deeds and not Torah. And the willow actually has neither, not taste or good deeds. So that's the person that you just mentioned is out of the system. Right? Some people have Torah and good deeds. Some people only have one or the other. And then there's the one that doesn't have neither. So what do we do with the four species? We bound them all together. They're all part of Israel. They're all part of Israel. We atone for each other, so to speak. We make up for each other's deficiencies. So that's the idea of unity on this day. Also, they say that these represent the different parts of the body, the hadassim. These myrtles represent the eyes that we might have sinned with during the year. In other words, those areas on Yom Kippur, it's a continuation of that atonement process. The things that we did with our eyes represented with the myrtle. We should have looked at certain things. And aravos, the willow, is in the shape of lips for maybe speaking things we shouldn't have spoken. The esrog represents sins of the heart, illicit desires. And the lulav is like a spine, which represents, again, unity. These ideas of shaking, this very mystical concept, and shaking these four species on Sukkot atones for the sins that we did with these limbs of the bodies. Okay, that's another idea here. Okay, what else? Actually, it says this. It says, "Koy roishem shochet v'av and shenishar b'adam shechet be'evora v'chushim." Right, all anything that's left that a person sinned in his limbs. Right, hakol miskaper lo b'schus mitzvah zu. They're all atoned for through this mitzvah. Shoisem aval b'yira. That he does it with love and with an awe of Hashem. All right, so we've discussed a few things here. Sukkot representing this idea of unity, representing that this world is a temporary dwelling, we should get by with as little as possible, and that the Yid puts his trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not on his own strength or his materialistic, you know, accomplishments. Again, this is a time of materialistic bounty. Okay. Also, the idea, again, we mentioned that sukkahs, when you're sitting in the sukkah, you should be thinking that I am fulfilling the mitzvah of remembrance, how Hashem sheltered us in the desert, in the supernatural sukkahs, as well as the actual shaky booths. And also understand that Hashem, just as He protected us there in the desert, is continually protecting us. In other words, it's like an invisible clouds of glory on us. I'll read you the Lashon here. Zecher la'anei ha'kavod. This is a remembrance of the clouds of glory. Maskirim sh'achsav kodesh baruch shomer es b'nei Yisrael k'moshe shamar osanu ba'anei ha'kavod. This is a remembrance that now Kodesh Baruch Hu is watching over Israel the way that He watched over us with the clouds of glory. Right? Rak ba'achshav lo'i ro'im anei ha'kavod. Right now we don't see the clouds of glory, but we have to have faith. Faith, bizman shel hester ponim. We're in a time of Hashem's hidden face, right? But we have to realize Hashem is watching us now just as much as He was in the desert, and that's called emunah, zeh emunah. That's called faith, and that's why the sukkah is called Sela d'munasa. It's called the shadow of faith. It's a very, very mystical idea. Okay, I'm going to flip over now. Talk about the following idea, more on Simchas Torah, but again, sukkahs being as man simchasenu, so a person could think, as it says, Sefer Todah says, Adam oichel v'sameach v'simchas haregel, a person would think that he can eat and drink during the simcha of this holiday. So you'll think, you know, the more I drink, the more I eat, the more simcha, more of a mitzvah it is. So he warns us, lo yimshach b'yayim lishtok v'lakal shroish. A person shouldn't sit there and get drunk or get lightheaded. You know, lakal shroish means joking, you know, just joking about everyday things. V'yayimer kol mish yayisav b'zeh yarbe b'mitzvah simcha. I'm having a good time, I'm laughing, I'm telling jokes. The more I do this, the more it's a mitzvah. No, that's not what Hashem commanded us. Ela simcha sheyesh bo avoda. But Hashem commanded us a simcha that's involved in doing the mitzvahs of Hashem. And here it is again. Tachas asher lo avaz Hashem lakecha b'simcha. Quotes the verse in Kisavo, because the curses can come upon us, lo aleinu, because we didn't serve Hashem b'simcha. Not just to be in simcha. Right, but being simcha that you're a Torah Jew and you're doing the mitzvahs. Ha, amarata teaches us how to avoid a besimcha, that you have to serve Hashem in simcha. So that's the idea. You know, it's a joyous time. Sukkahs, we're going to go to a lot of meals. We're going to be in a lot of places, and you know, we can forget what we're doing here. You know, like I always say, you can lose the Shabbos and the Cholent. Right? Don't lose the simcha of sukkahs and all what these things represent. You know, by just, you know, there's a mitzvah to drink and there's a mitzvah to eat meat. Right? But the Ikar mitzvah is to be in simcha on these concepts of sukkahs, right? That we have Torah, that we have mitzvahs, that we trust in Hashem, and not in the materialism. We have materialism, it's nice, but that's not our Ikar simcha. And Hashem's watching over us like He watched over us in the desert. These are the ideas that we're in simcha. Okay. And also, the idea here is on sukkahs, we're supposed to live in a sukkah like we do all year round. That's what we're supposed to do in sukkah. We do all our daily activities in the sukkah. Person, really, Ikar Adin, he's really supposed to sleep in the sukkah. He's supposed to have all his meals in the sukkah. And he's supposed to, if he can learn as well, he should learn in the sukkah. He'd mamish live in the sukkah, Taduro. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to live it like you do in your house the rest of the year. Right? So what the idea of this, that we only do this 7 days, right? Then we're going to go back in the house. So obviously, we're trying to go through a cycle of 7 days of sukkah, of doing all our normal activities, right, while in the presence of Hashem. You understand that? The sukkah, this is the same kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the same holiness of the land of Israel. You're in the sukkah, you're mamish in the presence of Hashem. You're doing all your daily normal activities in the sukkah. So the message of sukkah, that we're supposed to carry it over into the rest of the year, is to always live in the presence of Hashem, in our daily activities. Right, everything from when you're in the privacy of your home, right, to being sneezed, to being modest, to how you eat, to how you drink, Your home is not your castle. It's a dwelling place of Hashem also, like the sukkah. You're supposed to take the lesson of sukkah and bring the sukkah into the house for the rest of the year. And live out, being always in the presence of Hashem. As the verse says, one of the first verses in Shulchan Aruch, Shavisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. I picture Hashem before me always. In everything I'm doing, B'chol Derechecha Da'eyu. Know Hashem in all your ways. There's no such thing as a mundane activity. Sukkah teaches that. Sukkah teaches mundane activities, and the sukkah is a mitzvah. And we want to carry that out throughout the year. That all our mundane activities, we're also doing in the presence of Hashem, like in the sukkah. Okay. Now, I was going to talk about Shana Rab. I'll talk about that in a minute here. But the three festivals, right, represent the three patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Okay? And I'm not going to go into all of them, but Pesach, basically, it's Avraham Avinu. We see the Avraham celebrated Pesach, and Shavuos is Yitzchak, Sukkot is Yaakov Avinu. Now, the reason they say Sukkot is represented by Yaakov is that if you look in the Torah, it says there in Parshas, I think it's Vayetze, Vayishlach, it says there, Asa sukkos lemiknehu, I believe. He made sukkos, Yaakov made sukkos for his cattle. He made sukkos for his cattle. Sukkos meaning a shelter. Okay? Very nice. So because of that, that's the source, they say. Hey, Yaakov Avinu built sukkos for his cattle. Therefore, sukkos is represented by Yaakov Avinu. I mean, it just doesn't sit well. What does that mean? Just because he happened to build a shelter for his cattle, therefore, you know, Sukkot is represented by Yaakov. Okay, so we need an explanation here. Now we know, you know, what the Yaakov at the beginning, you know, he is told to us in the Torah what is his represent. What is his? I lost my train of thought here. But he is described. There we go. He is described in the Torah as Yeshev Oyelim. Ish Tam Yeshev Oyelim. He's described as a man who dwells in the tent. Well, that means the yeshiva. That means Torah. Yaakov is known for Torah. Known for Emes, truth. Torah and Emes are the same thing, right? It's the only truth in the world is Torah. And therefore, it's very fitting now. You realize that that Yaakov represents the truth. He represents the Torah. So what does it mean that Asa sukkos lemikneyo, that he made sukkos, remember, sukkos what? Is a temporary dwelling for his miknehu, for his cattle. Miknehu is the same word of kinyan, of possessions, like kine. Right? Again, Ecclesiastics. That, what's the idea of Ecclesiastics? That all your possessions are temporary. What did Yaakov Avinu do? Yaakov Avinu made a sukkah lemikneyu. For his gashmis, for his materialism, he only made a temporary dwelling. That's what Yaakov did. That taka represents sukkahs. That's why Yaakov Avinu represents sukkahs. He understood that the physical, materialistic world, that I'll just make a temporary dwelling. That's not really my permanent abode. My permanent thing is Torah. Yaakov Yeshev Olim. Yeshev means to dwell, as opposed to Vayigar, which means to sojourn. He was a Yeshev Olim. He dwelled in the tents of Torah. Right? Not a yeshiva. It's called a yeshiva from the same word Yeshev, because it's not just a place you learn. It's a permanent place. It's where you imbue everything that you learn in the yeshiva within you. It has a permanency to it. Okay? Now, we're going to go back. Just a second. Okay, I don't know if this is really going back. It's actually going forward. We're going to go now to the last day of Sukkot. The last day of Sukkot, which is in a certain aspect a holiday in its own right, is called Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah is an interesting day. Hoshana Rabbah, which is a Chol HaMoed, it's an intermediate day. You can do work. You can do all these things. At the same time, Hoshana Rabbah has an aspect of Shemini Atzeres also has this aspect, but it's a culmination of Sukkot and the days of awe. It's the final sealing could come on Hoshana Rabbah. In other words, if a person for some reason didn't get a righteous verdict on Yom Kippur, Hoshana Rabbah gives him the back door. Hashem may open up the back door for him and he can reverse the decision. so to speak. Now, on this night, a lot of people, Hasidim, they wear a kittel and they stay up all night. They say all Tehillim. So all the verses of Tehillim, of David HaMelech's Psalms. Because they're trying to get a last chance to get a righteous verdict. There's a verse in Tehillim. This is the 102nd Tehillim, Kuf Beis, Yud Ches. And it says there, Pana El Tefilas Ha'arar V'lo Baza Es Tefilosam. Hashem, turn to the prayer of the Arabis. The Arar is like a... It's represented by the Arava, this willow branches. And don't turn down our tefillahs. Now, on this day of Shana Rab, we do a special procession with just the willow branches. And if you remember, when we talked about the different species, right? Each one representing something, right? The lulav representing and the esrog and the myrtle. Hadassim representing Jews that have Torah and mitzvahs, or just one and not the other, right? But we said the Aravas has neither. It has neither taste, right? There's no fruit that comes from it, and neither smell. And it represents the Jew that has no Torah and mitzvahs. So we said that went with the, assimilated Jew. But the truth is, that represents our generation. This is what Hoshana Rabbah is telling us. Hoshana Rabbah gives us great hope for all of us who feel that we're not accomplishing in our Yiddishkeit. To feel no matter what we're doing, we're not doing enough, and we feel down, and we get down ourselves. We feel like the Arava. We have no taste, we have no Torah, and we have no smell, we have no good deeds. That's what we feel like sometimes. So David HaMelech, Rav Zevin explains, said this special prayer, that Hashem, look at the Arava, look at this willow. And don't turn down his prayers. Let me read to you inside. V'doras halalu, in this generation, she'ein lanu, lo melech, v'lo navi, v'lo kayen, v'lo uri matumim. Well, we live in a time, we have no king, we have no prophets, right? We don't have a kohanim, we don't have the base of Migdash, we don't have the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, all these beautiful concepts that helped us get in touch with Hashem. So this generation, a generation like that, Amar Dovid HaMelech, HaShalom Lefei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Dovid HaMelech, he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al tibzeh tifilasam, don't turn down their prayers. Talking to our generation, Zehar, that's us. Hainu harava. That's us, the willow, the harava. We ain't no tam, ain't no reyach. We have no Torah, we have no good deeds compared to previous generations, right? Lo tam Torah, lo maisim toivim. Amal bama devarim. But what do we have? That we know that we're an Arava. So one thing we have, Hashem, we know. We know who we are. We know we're not doing or learning like we should, doing the mitzvahs we should. It's because compared to other generations, especially, right? But at least we know we are an Arava. We know that. That in itself, this honest kvetch from our heart, that we want to serve you, and we're serving to the best of our ability. We're limited, we're in Arava, right? That's called, and he says, that we make our soul like dust, we're modest. Then what happens, it says, Az, patach libi b'torah sech, Hashem will open our hearts to Torah. He'll accept our tefillah on this day, our Shana Rabbah. He'll open our hearts to Torah. It's very interesting, because the very next day is Shmi Yetzeres and Simchas Torah, which is very interesting. So we admit, we know who we are, and we come to Hashem humbly, with the idea that we're in Arava, we don't have the Torah, we don't have the mitzvahs that we should, right? But we're trying to do the best we can. That in itself gives the ability on Hashana Rabbah to reverse any decree that we might not have come up, victorious, sort of vindicated from Yom Kippurim, right? Yom Kippur, Hashem sees that we're trying and we realize who we are. That in itself is a tremendous merit. So that's the idea. That's what we have to carry out on Sukkot. And Sukkot is this idea of being in Simcha, that we're a Yid and we have Torah. And even though sometimes, we're limited and we're not, sometimes we feel certain tekufas, certain times that we're not doing all we can, but the very fact that we're honest and we pour out our heart to Hashem, which represents represented by Hoshana Rabbah, that we're trying to serve you with our limited capacity, we're trying to serve you, and we understand that we're an Arava. were limited, right? So Hashem sees that, and He sees His loving children trying so hard to serve Him. He'll open up tremendous gates, as it says, Li Bitzchuli Pesach Shal Machat. Open me the gate of the eye of a needle. Make me the hole of the eye of a needle. In other words, make the effort to come close to me, and I'll make you, I'll enlarge that hole like a great hallway. And you'll start to feel the zis of Yiddishkeit. You'll start to feel the simcha of sukkahs and carrying out these ideas and serving Hashem with simcha to learn better, to do mitzvahs better, and the pasha should feel the beauty and the simcha of what it is to be a Jew, what it is to have the Torah, to do his mitzvahs, all represented by these ideas of sukkahs and Hashana Rabba, of course. Thank you very much. Everybody should have a freilich, a sukkah, a mamish, a gewaltig yom tov, where they should carry out the lessons of the simcha of sukkahs throughout the year, to always be in simcha and avodas Hashem.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.